How many folks like music? Well, basically everyone. How many people like jazz music? All right, yeah, I can relate. Jazz relaxes you. How many people like rock? Kind of pumps you up about the same. How many like classical? Oh, that's good. I actually, my favorite piece of music in the whole world is Handel's Messiah. Not everyone's favorite piece. I took, my wife and I used to go regularly when it was at the Royal Theater, and we took a couple one year who will remain nameless, but he is the director of ministry operations here at Saanich. And at the intermission, he said, "Wow, that was great. Now it's time to go for dessert." And I said, "Well, Rick, it's not over yet. We got another half to go." And he went, "Oh." Not everyone appreciates that kind of stuff. How many people like rap? Okay, all three of you. How many like country? Ooh, I feel sorry for you. But you know, they, whoever the great they is, says music is a universal language. But I want to suggest to you this morning that music's not the only universal language. I would suggest to you that suffering is also a universal language. And no matter how long you live on this planet, no matter how long you walk on this earth, every single human being at some point in their life is going to experience suffering. Like music, suffering is also a universal language. And today we're going to look at a very particular kind of suffering. The suffering that comes when you follow Christ. And we're going to look at a church that suffered and was persecuted for simply following Jesus. We're going to look at the church of Smyrna. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the city of Smyrna first. The city of Smyrna was 60 kilometers north of Ephesus, the city we looked at last week. Population there was about 250,000. Now, Smyrna was a beautiful city, an exceptionally beautiful city. It was situated on a magnificent harbor. It was referred to at that time as the crown of Asia. It was considered one of the most gorgeous cities in all the world to live in back then. On the coins that were circulated around in the city of Smyrna was this inscription: "Smyrna, first of Asia in beauty and size." It was a beautiful place. Also, this city, like no other city in Asia Minor, held great allegiance to Rome. No other city in all of Asia Minor had the level of allegiance to Rome that the people in Smyrna had. This city was a center of Roman worship, emperor worship. And so the political loyalty of the city, combined with a small but very highly anti-Christian Jewish population, made the city of Smyrna a very unsafe place if you were a Christ follower. Listen to verse 8 of Revelation chapter 2. "To the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these are the words of him who was first and last, who died and came to life again." Do you notice how Jesus presents himself to these Christ followers? He says, "I am the first and the last." Jesus is telling the disciples of Smyrna that their lives are bracketed, not by the decisions and the actions of Caesar, not by the rise and the fall of the Roman Empire, but in fact, their lives are boundaried by him. He is the first, and he is the last. And whatever else happens to them, he is there in the beginning, he is there in the end, and he's there all the way along. And what was true of the people in Smyrna is true for you and me. As you go through your life, whatever happens to you, Christ was there in the beginning, Christ will be there in the end, and Christ is with you as you journey through your days. Notice also he says he's the one who died and came to life again. The city of Smyrna was destroyed in 580 BC and was rebuilt in 290 BC. And this city was very proud of its resurrection. And Jesus says to the Christ followers in Smyrna, "I have also been dead and was brought back to life." And then he says this in verse 9, "I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich. I know the slander of those who say they are Jews but are not, but are a synagogue of Satan." These Christ followers were experiencing affliction. Jesus says, I know your afflictions. Now, the word afflictions in the Greek in which the New Testament was originally written, it implies crushing pressure. And so when they heard this, the first century person would have had an image that would come to mind of having a heavy boulder slowly crushing someone to death. You can imagine that, right? You have this heavy boulder placed on you, and the crushing pressure of the boulder is slowly crushing the life out of you. That's what this word means. It means to be under crushing pressure. And if you think about life, sometimes we're under crushing pressure in our lives because we make unwise, wrong, and ungodly choices. But sometimes in life, we're under crushing pressure because we make right and wise and godly choices. And the Christ followers in Smyrna, they were under this crushing pressure simply because they were choosing to follow Jesus. And because of that, they were losing their jobs. They were losing their families. They were losing their businesses. They were losing their reputations. They were even losing their lives simply because they were following Christ. And what's interesting to me is Jesus says, I know the pressure you're under. I know what you're going through. Do you notice what he does not say? He does not say, well, I'm going to relieve the pressure. Why not? Why doesn't Jesus come to these people who are faithfully following him and say, I'm going to take the pressure away? Well, the question we need to ask ourselves is, what were the Christ followers in Smyrna doing to be under this crushing pressure? And the fact is, they were doing nothing wrong. This is only one of two churches that has no correction from Christ in the letter to them. There's no correction here. There's no complaint here. There's only compliment and encouragement. Because the church in Smyrna was doing nothing wrong. They had not made ungodly or bad choices. They were making right and godly choices. They were doing everything right. And because of that, they were under this crushing pressure. And so you see, Jesus really couldn't relieve the pressure. Because in order for the pressure to be relieved from the Christ followers in Smyrna, they would have to stop doing what was right. They would have to stop being a church. They would have to stop faithfully following Jesus. They were under crushing pressure for doing what they were supposed to be doing. And that's what happens. There's a crushing pressure that comes when the kingdom of God clashes with other kingdoms. There's a crushing pressure that comes when the kingdom of light clashes with the kingdom of darkness, when God's values clash with other values. Think of it in your own life. There are times in your own life when you feel the pressure of being a Christ follower. Maybe you're trying to raise your children a certain way, and your children want to go to a party, and you know that at that party there's going to be ungodly things happening, and you say to your child, no, you can't go. And there becomes either within your house or maybe even with other parents a clash of values. And you're under pressure to relent. Or maybe in the school you go to or the place where you work, there's crushing pressure to conform, to let your values slip. And that's what the church in Smyrna was finding. They were under this crushing pressure. It also says that these Christ followers were experiencing poverty. Now, you need to understand, Smyrna was a wealthy city, and yet the Christ followers there were very, very poor. They were denied employment. People were not doing business with them. They were really ostracized. They were boycotted, just like many Christ followers around the world today. And Jesus says this in verse 9, I know your afflictions and your poverty. Listen to these words, yet you are rich. Jesus looks at these struggling, don't have a penny to their name, Christ followers. And he does not say, you're poor, but you're going to be rich. He says, you're already rich. And boy, do we need to hear that today. Because in North America, we have this sort of health and wealth prosperity gospel. And we think that if we follow Jesus, we're going to just drive BMWs and live in great houses, and we're going to have lots of wealth and lots of health, and life's going to be good, and that God's supposed to give us wealth and health. Just watch some of the TV preachers. There's a whole theology out there that says if you're right with God, God's going to make you healthy and wealthy. And if you're not healthy and wealthy, it's because you're not right with God. Really, tell that to the church of Smyrna. They were walking with Jesus step by step, and yet they experienced persecution and poverty. The truth is, some of the most richest Christ followers are living in the most oppressed third world countries. And materially, they're dirt poor. And yet they have a deep love of and a deep dependence on Jesus, and they have an authentic joy and peace that flows out of them. And I sometimes wonder if we here in Canada really know what true riches are all about. It also says these Christ followers were experiencing slander. Jesus says, I know the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are of the synagogue of Satan. You need to understand that under Roman law, Jewish people were exempt from both the sacrificial obligations and from military service. They did not have to worship Caesar. And yet the Jews lived in fear that this privilege would be revoked by the Roman government. And when Christ followers, who are mostly Jewish, would not bow to Caesar, it ramped up the fear of the Jews that were practicing Judaism that they would lose their exception, that they would no longer be exempt from Caesar worship. And so they turned the Christ followers into the Romans. And Jesus says, because of the rejection of him and because of the collaboration with authorities to turn on the Christ followers, that these Jewish folks are really in the league with Satan, not with God. So here's the church in Smyrna. It's facing crushing pressure. It's facing slander. It's facing poverty. And you know what? It wasn't going to end there. There was more to come. Look at verse 10. Do not be afraid of what you're about to suffer. I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison to test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Be faithful, even to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life. Not only would these Christ followers experience all this other stuff that I've already mentioned, they were going to experience imprisonment. And do you notice who's going to put them in prison? Do you see that? See what it says? It says the devil will put some of you in prison to test you. If we could video the events in Smyrna in those days, we would see the Roman police, cheered on by some political and religious leaders, rounding up Christ followers and putting them into jail. But let me suggest to you, what we would see is more important. What we would not see, is more important than what we would see. Because we need to remember that things are not as they seem. And behind the political and religious forces, behind the visible realities was the power of evil, which is out to destroy Christ and his kingdom. The real opposition that the people in Smyrna were facing was not the Roman authorities, was not the Jewish religious leaders. The real opposition was spiritual and unseen. Ephesians 6:12 says this, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And in this battle, in that day, some were going to go to jail. But let me say to you, the battle doesn't stop with Smyrna. It goes on today. We too are in a spiritual battle. I was thinking the other day, I think it's easier for countries where the persecution is overt to realize that they're in a spiritual battle. You talk about North Korea or China or Saudi Arabia or Iran or Iraq, and you try being a Christian there and you're going to be persecuted. And you understand very quickly that this battle is spiritual. But in Canada, where we've got freedom and the world is just, like, there's hardly any, if any, persecution here, that we forget that we too are in a spiritual battle. I was thinking about this with our church. Let me just share something with you. I was thinking about with our church. You know, for the last year or so, we've really been struggling with funding the ministry side of our budget well. You know, we've got so many great things going on here at the church. We've got some great ministry happening every Tuesday morning. The staff sit around and we talk for 15 minutes or so about God working stories that we've heard, how God is working in people in our congregation's lives. We're making a difference globally. We're starting to make a difference locally. I've been sharing with the leadership that I really think our next ministry year is going to be an unprecedented year of ministry here at the church. And we've got a ton of great things happening. But in one area, we seem to be struggling. And that's on funding the ministry side well. And as we look at next year's budget, we're looking at how do we cut back? How do we cut back so we can fund the ministry side well? And we're often looking as a church leadership at the practical stuff. And as I was thinking about the church of Smyrna and thinking about a spiritual battle, I think sometimes we forget the spiritual side. And that one of the greatest things that Satan would want and the powers of evil would want is for this church not to be funded well so we cannot continue to take more and more kingdom ground. And perhaps the whole thing of funding the ministry side well is not a practical issue, it's a spiritual issue because we, like the church in Smyrna, are in a spiritual battle. You see, we just forget that here. And if we were thrown in prison, we would probably remember quickly that we're being persecuted and it's spiritual in nature. But listen, these Christ followers would also experience death. Jesus says to them, be faithful even to the point of death. There was a letter that was written around 160 AD by the church of Smyrna, and it was circulated to the other churches in Asia Minor. In that letter, they talk about the fact that 12 believers had been martyred. They talked about another 11 believers that had been scourged and devoured by beasts in the Colosseum. Jesus said, be faithful even unto death, and some of them had to do that. I don't know if you've heard the story of the bishop of Smyrna. His name is Polycarp. And one day when Polycarp was eating dinner, the soldiers came to him. And they arrested him, and they took him to the Colosseum. And as he entered that Colosseum, many in the crowd heard a voice from heaven say to Polycarp, be strong, Polycarp, play the man. Now, Polycarp was the bishop of Smyrna, and he was in his 80s, and he was a respected person. People thought of him, even people who were anti-Christian, thought of him as a godly man. And because of his reputation and because of his age, the Roman proconsul gave him a final chance. He said to Polycarp, if you will renounce Christ, if you will pledge allegiance to Caesar, I will let you live. Listen to Polycarp's reply. 86 years I have served him, and he has done me no wrong. How can I blaspheme my king who has saved me? And so they prepared the wood, and Polycarp voluntarily undressed and climbed up onto the wood. And they didn't nail him to the stake like they normally do for people they're about to burn, because they knew Polycarp was not going to move. And he stood there and he prayed. And in the Fox's Book of Martyrs, it tells us that after he prayed, the Roman authorities lit the fire. But the fire did not consume Polycarp. It formed an arch around his body. And the Roman authorities were perplexed by this. And so when the fire died out, the executioner went up and stabbed Polycarp to death. In the past, Christ followers have been thrown to lions to be eaten. They've been burned at the stake. They've been covered with the skins of animals and thrown to wild dogs. They've been covered with tar and lit as human torches to illuminate walkways. Listen to what it says in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 35 to 38. It says this, others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute and persecuted and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and in holes in the ground. And it's on the shoulders of these men and women that we stand. And folks, the persecution hasn't stopped. It's still happening today. Nina Shea, in her book, In the Lion's Den, says this: millions of North American Christians pray in their churches each week, oblivious to the fact that Christians in many parts of the world suffer brutal torture, arrest, imprisonment, even death in their homes and their communities, for no other reason than the fact that they're Christians. All over the world today, right now, Christians are facing persecution. I want to share with you by way of video the story of a man named Hanny. Now, as they say on the news hour, just before they show something that's a little graphic, warning, some of these images may be disturbing, so you may want to close your eyes for part of this. But I want you to hear this story, because this is reality for many Christians in the world today.
Hanny was born in 1985 to a Christian family that lives way below the poverty line in a very small village in Upper Egypt that does not appear on any of the Egyptian maps. Hanny grew up as a Christian. Like all youth, he had dreams of completing his military service, working to support himself, marrying a young lady from his village, and having a family of his own. But the dream was interrupted by the unexpected during his military service.
ويعملوا حركات مع هاني عشان يتخانق كان يمد له رجله كده ويعنقله وهو ماشي ويوقع كان يقول له بوس البيادة وكان يكدر وكان يلدع بالسجار
يخلوا السطرة دي وتلف حوالين العساكر لو يزحفوه يقولوا له خلي الصور دي تنفع خلي الناس اللي بتعملهم دول ينفعوه.
The commander had decided to get rid of Hanny forever before he could report and end his career and future. The terrible news came that Hanny had been found drowned in the Nile in a small village close to home. They were told he was in the hospital fridge. Although they were shaking and almost collapsing, they went to the hospital to find Hanny's body showing clear signs of horrible torture. He was not drowned, but rather terribly tortured, killed and thrown in the Nile. This is what they found.
It's estimated today that over 200 million Christians are suffering interrogation, arrest, and even death for simply following Jesus. Another 400 million Christians face discrimination and alienation. It's estimated this year that 150,000 Christ followers will be martyred for their faith. In fact, in the 20th century, there were more people killed for following Jesus than the last 19 centuries combined. And so to those being persecuted both back then and today, Jesus gives these encouragements. Listen to verse 9. I know your afflictions and your poverty. And the truth is, Jesus does know. Because Jesus, when he was here on the earth, he experienced poverty, he experienced slander, he experienced arrest, he experienced death. He knows. And if you're being persecuted for your faith, he knows. To those all around the world who are being persecuted to the point of death, he knows. And then he says this in verse 10, you will suffer persecution for 10 days. In other words, he says to the church in Smyrna, your persecution is going to last 10 days. Most scholars feel 10 days means a brief period of time. The idea is there's going to be a time of affliction, of tribulation, of persecution. But compared to eternity, it's going to be like 10 days. It's going to be a short period of time. And then your suffering is going to come to an end. How does he know that? Because he is in control. And the truth is today, evil is on a leash. I like the way the Swiss theologian Oscar Coleman puts it. He uses the illustration of World War II and D-Day and Victory Day. And if you know a little bit about World War II, you know that D-Day was the key day in the war. That on that day, as the Allies approached the beach of Normandy, it all sort of hung there. The Allies knew that if they got a beachhead, victory was going to eventually be theirs. The German army knew that if they could force the Allies back out into the ocean, that eventually they would prevail. And as we all know, the Allies got the beachhead. And on D-Day, they knew that victory was theirs, that there was a victory day coming. But between D-Day and Victory Day, there was still battles to fight. The outcome of the war was assured, but there was battles to fight. People would die. There would be suffering. There would be destruction. And in a spiritual sense, that's where we're at. You see, spiritually, there was a D-Day. It's called Easter weekend. And on Easter weekend, Jesus hung on the cross and said, "It is finished." And at that moment, all the sins of the world, past, present, future, were forgiven. And then they put him in a tomb. And evil thought it had won. That it had established the beachhead. But in reality, we know that Jesus won because he rose on the third day. And on Easter weekend, that was our D-Day. And we know that victory is assured. Again, the book of Revelation is all about Jesus. And at the end, we know that Jesus wins, that there's going to be a victory day. But we live in between. We live in between the spiritual D-Day and the spiritual victory day. And while evil is still on a leash, there's still battles to fight. There'll still be death and destruction and suffering. But when we know that Jesus is in control and that evil is on a leash and that eventually he is going to win, then when the persecution comes, you can endure. And to those being persecuted, Christ gives this challenge. He says, "Do not be afraid of what you're about to suffer. Be faithful even to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life." The one who is first and last, the beginning and the end, the everlasting to everlasting, who died and now lives, and who has stripped away death and hell of its power, and now holds the prison keys. He who walks among the churches and knows what each church is going through, says to the church in Smyrna, says to you and me, says to the persecuted church in the world today, do not be afraid. Be faithful. Fear and faith are opposites. It's really a matter of focus. If you focus on your situation, if you focus on the persecution, you're going to get fearful, and then fear is going to paralyze and cripple you. And the church in Smyrna needed to remember to look beyond themselves and beyond their suffering to Jesus, because he's there behind a very thin veil. And they needed to keep their focus on him. And then they would find that their faith would free them and bring them the courage and the strength they needed to keep on keeping on. And we need to do the same thing. Maybe in your life there's some things in your life that are gripping you. Fear is gripping you, and it's paralyzing you and creaming you today and just not allowing you to live in freedom. I want to suggest to you then that you need to get a vision of who Jesus is. Because when you get a vision of who Jesus is, you'll find that your faith will overcome your fear. When you get a glimpse of who Jesus is in the present, when you see him as the loving high priest, the glorious and reigning king, the pure and sinless one, the one who is first and last and who is from everlasting to everlasting, who died and now lives, whose blazing eyes purify, whose thunderous mighty voice speaks forth truth, whose powerful right hand holds the seven stars, who has stripped death and hell of its power, and who shines in brilliant glory, and whose kingdom sits on an unshakable foundation that will never, ever collapse. When you set your eyes on Jesus, not on your circumstances, faith will overcome your fear. And you notice, to those who overcome, Jesus gives two rewards. First, the crown of life. Be faithful even to the point of death, and I will give you the crown of life. In the city of Smyrna, they held athletic games. Those athletic games were famous throughout all of Asia. And those that finished the race were given a laurel wreath that went on their head. And it wouldn't have been hard for Christ followers to imagine the Christian life as a race that required energy and focus and perseverance and sweat and pain. But Jesus is saying, at the finish line stands one who is the first and the last. And in his hand is the crown of life. And everyone who crosses the finish line will get the crown of life. And he also says, you'll have victory over the second death. Verse 11, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes will not be hurt at all by the second death. Although many Christ followers will suffer to the point of death, they will not be hurt by the second death. Now, what's he talking about there? Well, the first death is the physical death. Then unless the Lord comes, we're all going to die. But the second death is the spiritual death. It's eternal separation from God. And that's what happens after your physical death to those who don't know Christ. And while Jesus does not promise immunity from the first death, he does promise Christ followers immunity from the second death. And he says, no Christ follower is ever going to experience the second death. When you die as a Christ follower and you reach the finish line, you'll get the crown of life and you'll live eternally with Jesus and with other Christ followers who have gone on before you. Did the church in Smyrna keep the faith and overcome? Yes. You know how we know that? Because of the seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation, the only church that still exists is the church of Smyrna. And the city of Smyrna today is now called Izmir. It is the third largest city in Turkey. And it is a vibrant center of Christian Eastern Orthodox worship. Seldom during the last 19 centuries has the pressure relented on these Christ followers. But seldom has their vitality and their faith waned. What about us? Who knows what's coming our way? Who knows what challenges you're even going to face this week as you go to school or to work? What about us? Are we willing to follow the examples of the Christ followers in the Church of Smyrna and millions of others of Christ followers around the world who say, no matter what happens, no matter what happens, I'm going to stand for Christ. I'm going to be faithful to the end, and I'm going to look to the finish line and know that the crown of life is mine if I finish strong. Are we willing to stand with the persecuted church and say, we too in this country of freedom will stand firm on Christ. Let's pray together. Lord, I just pray that we will do that. I pray that we will be a church. I pray that we will be a people who stand firm for you. Lord, as you become our first love, as we focus on you and then do everything we do in your power because of you, may we stand firm on you, knowing that you will see us through. In Jesus' name, amen.